Right, guys, hello, and welcome to a new series here on Fight Night Picks. In case you missed it, MMA Legends. This time I have been tasked, or better yet, challenged, and have accepted the challenge of putting into perspective Lyoto Machida and his place in mixed martial arts, what makes him in the UFC, what makes him a legend, and putting a little perspective and giving a little insight into his career. All right, let's start with some part of the reason why the Lyoto Machida is sort of confused in history and why he is not really looked at, in my opinion, properly in history. This whole bit about the Machida era, right? It's gone on to be called the Machida era. Joe Rogan, when Lyoto Machida defeated Shogun Hua, referred to what was forthcoming as the Machida era. Like, we've moved into the Machida era, right? And Joe's gone back and said it was one of his regrets, and he shouldn't have said it, and he was wrong about it. Listen, I get calling it an era and framing it in that way, but this kid went on a run. He fought a lot of Hall of Famers, and I think that sort of taking away from his legacy is a little bit unfair as well. So what we're going to do is we're going to process Lyoto in a couple of different ways. So when I look at fighters, I look at them, especially guys that I've watched in the past, because I'm an old head, I've been around for a while. I process them through a couple of different lenses. Obviously, I like to look at some footage of theirs. I like to take a look at their resume and see what that tells me. But I really like to start with two books that I think are essential if you are an MMA fan. I have the MMA Encyclopedia, which is written by Jonathan Snowden, and the UFC Encyclopedia, which is written by Thomas Kerbasi. One is obviously just a UFC document and mostly talks about the things that happened in the UFC. The other, although I will say this, when you're reading fighter biographies, they do a pretty good job of talking about everything the fighter did. And then the MMA Encyclopedia was a great piece of writing by Jonathan Snowden that talks about all of it. All right, so I want to go to the UFC Encyclopedia first, because I think it talks a little more about Machida's resume. So we'll talk about that sort of abstractly, and then we'll get into the particulars of his style, and then we'll look at the entire resume and break it all down. Then the highlight reel, and I think it'll be an interesting way that we end the podcast. I think you guys will like it. All right, so let's open up the UFC Encyclopedia here and take a look at it. What I found interesting in reading the biography of Lyoto Machida was when the UFC Encyclopedia talked about his resume. So we'll use their words as a way to sort of set the table for a look at his resume a little bit later. Okay, so Machida began fighting for the K-1 organization in 2004 and added two more wins to his ledger as he submitted Michael the Black Sniper McDonald and decision Sam Greco. 2005 saw another high-profile name fall to defeat at Machida's hands as BJ Penn rose up in weight all the way to heavyweight to lose a three-round decision. This is one of those crazy fights. It's on YouTube where if you tell people who kind of only maybe caught the tail end of Machida's career and only knew him as a 205-pounder. I mean, the tail end of his career was at 85. But him fighting BJ Penn is just insanity. The fact that the fight even exists is pretty nuts. But it's on YouTube. Check it out. All right, Machida then stopped Dmitry Wanderlei back home in Brazil and outpointed Vernon White, former Lions Den fighter, in his U.S. MMA debut for the now-defunct WFA in 2006. With the demise of that organization, he migrated to the UFC, where he debuted in 2007 with a three-round decision over Sam Hoger at UFC 67, which you'll remember, Sam Hoger was a member of the Ultimate Fighter. In his early days in the organization, Machida was criticized for his methodical and unorthodox style, but you couldn't argue with the results. Two more victories over David Heath and Kazuhiro Nakamura. He submitted Rami Sokaju, decision Tito Ortiz, and knocked out Thiago Silva. He made believers of even his harshest critics. Next up was a world title shot, and with a second round knockout of Rashad Evans at UFC 98 in May of 2009, he announced to the world that karate is back. A two-fight series with countryman Mauricio Shogun Hua was the first order of business for the new champion after winning the first bout via controversial decision. He was knocked out in the rematch at UFC 113 in 2010, costing him his belt and his unbeaten record. A second consecutive loss followed, a close decision to Quentin Rampage Jackson. And then at UFC 129, he knocked out Randy Couture with what is referred to sort of loosely as the crane kick. We'll get to all that, right? But this is a good way to sort of intro how he sort of started out and then made his way into the UFC. All right, now let's go to Snowden. We'll read some of his work, talking about Liotta in the MMA Encyclopedia. And there's much more about Liotta in the UFC Encyclopedia. So, again, I'm sure it's not cheap. It looks to me like a $40 or $50 book I bought 100 years ago. I have no idea how much it costs. But get both of these books if you can find them. All right, let's talk about what Snowden said. The thing that stuck with me here with Snowden was he talked about Enter the Dragon. Machida was by no means the first prominent mixed martial artist to hold rank in a traditional karate discipline, but he was the first to look like a karate fighter in the cage, to move like one, leaping in and out of striking range with his head back in an uncommonly upright posture, throwing kicks from unpredictable angles, and disguising foot sweeps behind straight punches. Machida is a Sonny Chiba movie brought to life. Although he began training in both sumo and Brazilian jiu-jitsu as a teen, his study of other styles has always been in the service of implementing his family's art. When Japanese professional wrestling legend Antonio Inoki took him under his wing, Machida added Muay Thai and wrestling to his repertoire. The end result of this extensive cross-training is a fighter who is versed in everything his opponents might throw at him, while his opponents have never seen anyone like Machida before. The knock on Machida has always been his lack of aggression, his caution, his unwillingness to take a punch in order to land one. If you subscribe to the stand and bang ethos that dominates the sport, Liotta Machida doesn't have much to offer you. I agree with that assessment by Snowden. But that's what makes Machida unique. That's what makes him a fighter you've never seen before. When you compare him to other guys who've done karate, and we'll use the most famous one, which is Stephen Thompson. Stephen Thompson is a very sideways fighter. He kind of uses his head as a means to bait people in and strikes with counters. So karate fighters, Machida, Thompson, no different in terms of wanting to counterpunch. Thompson is a little bit more free with sort of putting his head out there than Machida is, and that became the knock. Machida would keep his head back, which is a great strategy. It made you want to chase him. He was very effective with kicking. He was a very effective wrestler. Like, he brought a lot to the table, Liotta Machida. So let's talk about the resume. And for the resume, I'm going to go ahead and do a screen share. And we'll go all the way up it. We'll hit it quickly. But we need to take a look at the resume because it's impressive. And he came along at a time where you had to fight where the roster was much thinner when he started. So there's a lot of big names on his resume because that's the world in which he operated. He was up near the top, and he fought guys that were up near the top. All right, so let's go ahead and take a look at the resume. I want to start with Sherdog. And the reason why I want to start with Sherdog is to give you, like, the overview of the resume and give you an understanding of, like, you know, the things that Sherdog does well, which is showing you you know, the number of wins, the number of losses. So in his wins, 11 of them were by KO or TKO, that's 42%. Two were by submission, 13 decisions. Now, here's the thing about Liotta Machida. He's a very hard guy to judge for a lot of different reasons. A lot of MMA judges are from boxing and have a background in that. So not only is Machida an MMA fighter, he's a karate fighter as well, and he fights that way. He's a point fighter in a sense, but he does look for big punches and looks to knockouts. So most of his wins came in decisions. Most of his losses came in decisions. The highest percentage of wins and losses were both decisions. Three KO, TKO losses, two submissions, obviously the very famous one to Jones, which we'll get to. But those decisions and the fact that he has a lot of decisions, a lot of split decisions, is really what makes his resume very interesting. All right, so let's take a look at the full resume. We'll go ahead and do it from the beginning, utilizing Tapology. Early on, right, so three fights in, he's already now fought Stephen Bonner, Rich Franklin, right? Now he's six fights in, he fought BJ Penn. Okay, now he's, what do we got, eight fights in, it's Vernon White. So he's already sort of made his way to the big time because, again, the rosters were smaller, right? So you would see all these guys. Let's take a look at if WFA is what I think it was, In terms of that one, yeah, that was the one that had Quentin Rampage Jackson and Boss Rutten at the top of the bill. So if you look, Boss Rutten's last fight, I believe, was a professional. This is another one of those promotions that had fighters, was bought out by the UFC to get those fighters. And, you know, Rampage was a WFA fighter who came over and ultimately fought Chuck for the belt. Boss Rutten, Lyoto Machida, Mayhem Miller, Rico Rodriguez. A lot of these guys were on. This is a very interesting Marvin Eastman, Martin Campman. So even though this is probably a promotion most of you guys have not heard of, this might be an interesting card to go ahead and look back at. Getting back to Machida's resume, again, we talked about David Heath is a name that you don't hear nowadays, but back in the day, he was kind of a big deal. Sokaju, same thing. Not a guy you hear a lot about now. I mean, listen, this guy looked apart. He was ripped up. He had some big name wins. Went the distance with some high profile fighters. Next up, Cito Ortiz. So as you see, we're not but 12 fights into Machida's career, and he's now made it to the UFC. He is fighting Cito Ortiz, and he's an undefeated fighter. So I mean, he is on the path towards title contention. The next fight is Thiago Silva, who he knocks out. The next fight after that is for the belt. Right, so he's in the promotion for, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 fights. He gets Tito. The next fight is probably a title eliminator between him and Silva. He gets a high-profile knockout there. The next fight's Rashad for the belt. Takes the belt off Rashad in this fight. And number 17, greatest knockout of all time. It's the stanky leg. I'm sure we'll get to it when we look at the highlights. And then the next one, he fights Shogun. And has a controversial decision. Again, this is another one of those fights where, as you watch it, it's hard to tell who you think is really the more effective fighter. If my memory serves me correctly, I've always kind of been a little bit of a Shogun homer, or fanboy, or stan, whatever you want to call it. So I probably was pulling for Shogun in that fight. But I remember, you know, there's fights where even if your guy is fighting, you might say, all right, the other guy looked good. Right, but I remember this being a close fight, and I remember being disappointed with the win, because the next fight is him and Shogun again. They remade it very quickly. It was the next fight for both guys, if I'm not mistaken, and you know, Shogun gets the knockout. Now the next fight's Quentin Rampage Jackson. All these fights, guys, are really great. They're all available on Fight Pass. It's good to go ahead and look back at Machida's career. So you know, if you're doing work and you want to say, okay, who's a guy in mixed martial arts that I don't know a lot about, that I want to know a lot about, this is your kind of guy. Quentin Rampage Jackson was a split decision. Just when you're like wondering, okay, Rogan said the Machida era. It's clearly not the Machida era, because I got the loss to Hua. He gets knocked out. I got the split decision loss to Rampage. All right, well, Randy Couture is the fight that made us believers again. Crane kicks Randy Couture, knocks him out. This is a point in Randy's career where he still is a good enough fighter. If we take a quick look at Randy. So let's look at the fights that were before Machida, and let's look at the fights that were after Machida. So if we scroll down Randy real quick, Machida is 5th fight in Randy's career. So he had just fought James Toney. But my point in saying this is, he fought Brandon Vera one, fought Mark Coleman one, fought James Toney one. So he put a little bit of a streak together, and then Machida was, okay, which one of these guys might be the next guy to fight for a championship? So we get back to Leota's career, knocks out Randy, and then it's John Jones. We'll get to John Jones later in the podcast, because John Jones had some very favorable things to say about Leota and kind of puts who he was in a much better perspective than I could. And I'm going to give you guys what I can here. And I think I have a pretty good grasp on Machida and his career and his technique and his style. But when you hear it from John Jones later in the podcast, you'll understand what made this guy special. All right, next up, Ryan Bader knocks him out. Dan Henderson. Now, as we're looking at this, guys, this is quite a list of guys who were at the top. Not everybody's a Hall of Famer, but if I'm doing it right off the top of my head quickly, like in terms of who's going to be a Hall of Famer, Bonner's already in. It's for a fight. Okay, so we got Rich Franklin, BJ Penn. We got Tito Ortiz. We got Rashad Evans. We got Shogun Hua. We got Randy Couture. We got Ryan Bader, who if he had Ryan Bader's put together a Hall of Fame career post-UFC. He probably wouldn't have made the Hall of Fame based on what he did in the UFC, but he's a Hall of Famer. If there was a proper mixed martial arts Hall of Fame, Ryan Bader's a Hall of Famer. Dan Henderson's a Hall of Famer for sure. Phil Davis probably doesn't make it. Mark Munoz probably doesn't make it. Musasi probably does. So let's get back to assessing the resume, and then we'll continue with the Hall of Fame talk. But knocks out Ryan Bader. Again, here's another split decision. Fights Phil Davis. Looked pretty good in the fight, but you know, Davis gets the win. So then, okay, now we're like, all right, where am I at in the 205-pound division? He's kind of not really sure, right? So then it's Mark Munoz. Fights Mark Munoz, head kick knockout, back on track. Fights Yegor Mousasi, gets the unanimous decision. So now, okay, it's a little bit later in his career. Now it's time to fight former champion Chris Weidman. Actually, this is for the belt. So they're fighting for the belt. He loses to Weidman, but again, and we'll see this shortly, looks good, right? It has some moments where he's really putting on Weidman. This is, as you can see, not everybody's in love with Tapology in terms of what they do. I like him in terms of how they assess things. All right, so third best MMA fight of the year, 2014, 28th greatest middleweight fight of all time. All right, so we'll leave that as what it was. It was a fight of the night that night. All right, so he loses to Weidman for the belt, and then it's back to staying at middleweight, fights CB Dalloway. Okay, looks good, another first-round knockout. He seems to always be able to figure out a way to right the ship. He has a loss and then comes out with a big highlight reel kind of knockout that gets him right back into the title picture. After that, it's Luke Rockhold gets choked out. It's Yoel Romero. Gets TKO'd. It's Derek Brunson, TKO'd. And then, again, we're staying at 85 and trying to see what we can put together. Fights Eric Anders, split decision win, which, I mean, honestly, he should have ran away with a fight like that. And then here we go again, another highlight reel. It's the front kick that just, you know, I mean, this is the one where he knocked Vitor Belfort's face off and then bowed to him. So this guy's a gangster of the highest degree. Fights Carvalho, and now, okay, so now he transitions out of UFC, makes his way to Bellator, fights Carvalho, looks good. It was a split decision, fights Chael, second round, flying knee, and then ground and pounds him, and then ends his career up to this point with a split decision loss to Mousasi. So when he loses, very few guys have definitively beaten him. Shogun did, obviously, Rockhold did, Romero did, Brunson did. Those guys were later in his career in a different weight class. But it's not many guys that really got a drop on him in terms of as the resume looks. All right, so then, this is what we have. All right, this is what we're looking at in terms of the resume. And again, if we're finishing this out, let's go back to what we said earlier. So Mousasi, MMA Hall of Famer. Weidman, MMA Hall of Famer. Dalloway, no. Rockhold, no. Romero, maybe. Brunson, no. Anders, no. Vitor's a Hall of Famer. Rafael Carvalho. Chael, you can make a case for. A lot of people will point to the losses. Chael fought a lot of big fights, and he had a lot of big, high-profile losses. But if you remove those big fights, he's a tough one. He's a tough one in terms of the Hall of Fame. I think most people would say no. If he would have held the belt even for a short period of time, you probably would have put him in the Hall of Fame. I think most people would say no. I'd probably put him in. And then it's ending with Mousasi. All right, let's get back to this.
Fight Night Picks is brought to you by Strikeforce Energy. Head on over to the website strikeforceenergy.com. If you enjoy the flavor of freedom, the company's veteran-owned and everything's made in America. They've got great apparel. You can turn any 16.9-ounce beverage into an energy drink. There's no sugar, no calories, no stirring, or no shaking required. They also have a line of different products as well as Strikeforce coffee. So if I head into my cart, I've got a 4-count sample pack, I've got a 20-ounce coffee mug, and if I head into that checkout, use the promo code FNP, click to apply, and you're going to save 20% off any order. That's FNP at StrikeForceEnergy.com. Today's episode is brought to you by Spretzbox. Head on over to the website, Spretzbox.com. All you have to do, click to get started. You can either order one of their boxes that has over $100 in value, or maybe you're interested in a single item, like these great socks. So click on them, add them to your cart, head on over to the checkout, and then all you have to do is enter in the promo code FNP as follows here. You'll save 10% off your first box or your complete first order. That's spretzabox.com.
So how the way we're going to end this is we're going to talk about a highlight reel. We're going to look at some of his work, and then we're gonna see what John's Bone Jones has to say about him. All right, let's get to the highlight reel. So this is just a highlight reel that you can find on YouTube. I wanted to use a YouTube highlight reel for a lot of different reasons. One, to give shouts to whoever the person is that did it. And two, to just kind of give you an idea of what this guy was at his best and take a look at him. All right, so as we get the highlight reel rolling, he's coming out looking real hard. Always came fit, always came on weight. A real professional. That's who Leona Machida was. All right, so the first thing we got here is we're seeing him in there. Always respectful, pre-fight. Anyway, we're seeing him in there starting off. After some training footage and the guys running on the beach, the very first thing we see here is the front kick that just takes Vitor Belfort out and then bows on him and then goes to the knee. I mean, listen, I appreciate how respectful he was, but man, is it gangster when you kick somebody's face off like that and then you have no respect and all that. I mean, that's some real savagery right there. I mean, this guy, when he was on, he could take your face off. Same thing right here. Mark Munoz, I mean, kicked him in the head. Munoz has no idea where he is. Bows on him the same thing. CB Dolloway, kicked to the body, and he's like, he's had enough. And then Machida swarms him and then finishes him with strikes. That kick to the body, though, is just, I mean, listen, the guy was nasty. I mean, when you're trying to protect yourself against that kind of variance of kicks. Now, Ryan Bader had enough, rushes him, crushed. Thiago Silva, same thing, crushed. Completely out there. Tito comes in, he gets a knee to the body for his troubles, and then Machida with the top game. Here's Sokoju getting choked out. Here's some of his work against John Jones. It's the rushes, guys. It's the lulling you, and a lot of guys do that now. John Jones does it a little bit. You know, here's some of the leg work. Here's him against Rashad. I mean, hey, listen, I kicked to the body, followed up by strikes, drops him with one. You know, Rashad comes in. Machida was just very accurate. He kind of would get you coming. He'd come at you while you're coming in. It's a very timing-based game. And this left hand he put on Rashad that just stanky-legged him. I mean, he was just a really accurate fighter. Struck well in close, struck well from distance. He really preferred to strike with the hands closer and the legs. Man, that sounds obvious, but to me, he was just a much more effective fighter. This is some of his work against Chael. I mean, he was all over Chael. Chael was just not – this is late in Chael's career. And that – I mean, he just had the timing. The flying knee, drops Chael, puts him in la-la land, and then Machida swarms him. Listen – there's a lot to love about the way Machida fought. And here's some of his work against Henderson. Again, finding openings, staying away. The beauty of that head back style was that he gave you the impression with the placement of his body that he was a lot closer to you than he in fact was. And when he was ready to play defense, he had his head back and could you know, here's some of his work against Weidman again. Fantastic fight. Wyman's the one that gets his hand raised, but he just looks great in what he's doing. Finding some openings, mixing it up, elbows, punches. I mean, he was a true eight-limber in the sense that he could kick you to the legs, body, and head. He would elbow you. He had great straight punches. He had great hooks. He was a good counter puncher. I mean, this guy brought a lot to the table. It's just that his style was such a timing-based style that if it wasn't there, it wasn't there. It's kind of like in basketball. If you're a jump shooter and you're living and dying by the jump shot, if the jump shot's not there, the jump shot's not there. Here's the Randy knockout. Saw it a couple times. He brings the one leg up, knocks him dead with the other. And Randy was just like out on his feet. you know, the where Randy was mentally on the plunge, if you will, to the canvas, who knows? Because it was just all over. Once he connected, the fall was just academics at that point. So listen, we saw a lot of work there from Machida, and he looked fantastic in doing it. I just think that there are guys who you can take a lot from what they brought to the table. It doesn't necessarily mean, again, if you're going to have a style that is based on timing, that is based on accuracy and all that, it's based on counterpunching, you are, in a sense, at the mercy of what your opponent is willing to give you, right? We saw that with Romero and Adesanya. If you are going to decide, to me, he fought a very similar style, a lot more active than Romero, but very much, I'm going to wait for you to come to me, and then we'll see what happens from there. Now, he could be an aggressive fighter. He could be a very offensive fighter at times, if necessary, but it was a lot of, like, pulling you in, and then going after you. So I think that if you look at Machida's body of work, and if you look at, and again, he's been criticized for this, and I won't let him off the hook for this. If you look at the way that he looked at the end of the fights, he did a good job of avoiding being hit. Right now, the criticism of that I've heard towards Machida in the past is that was him saying the point of karate is to hit and not get hit. So if I'm getting hit in his world, the other fighter is scoring points, and his goal is to hit and not get hit, as I said. So that means that he's avoiding contact at all costs. I think that he was a little bit more criticized for that than he should have been. I feel like some of that criticism was unfair. But, you know, it is what it is. A lot of split decisions, that's where we're led to, right? That's the outcome of fighting that sort of style, is that sometimes you're going to have split decisions and it's not always going to go in your favor. But I think that if you were to take a look at Machida on Fight Pass and really dig deep into his career, which there's not time to do here in terms of the Fight Pass portion of it, you'll find a guy who really brought a lot. If you're a fighter and you're looking for a guy to take pieces from, right? I'll take this from Machida. I'm not saying fight like him in its entirety, because this is a guy who fought that way based on an entire life of training in that way. So he's got a set of skills that he's built over many, many years. But there are some counter fighting techniques that you could take from him. There are some leg fighting, some leg strike techniques you could take from him. There's some hip feints. He was really into like the just feigning big time with the hips. And I will let you know it was coming. And when you're that deadly with your legs, particularly if you're kind of giving your opponent the entirety of your body, right? So he would switch stances at times, but sometimes he would just be like straight facing the guy and start to work the hips. Then that allows you a lot of leeway and a lot of options in terms of what you're going to do. Now, again, if you're counter striking, if he were a much more offensive fighter, would he have been a much more successful fighter? Potentially. But didn't do a great job of protect. He protected his head more with his posture than he did with his hands or his movement. He moved his head fairly well, but he was, his arms and his hands were offensive weapons. They were not a part of his defense, in my opinion. All right, so let's get to Bones Jones, right? Because what Bones Jones has to say is pretty substantial here. So I'm just going to let Jones get the final word. I'll probably say some things at the end. But the amount of respect that John Jones had for Lyoto Machida pre-fight, during the fight, and post-fight, I think what gets lost in history is the fact that Jones choked him out and then dropped him, right? So that just looks like, you know, Jones was such a superior athlete and took him out, I think, in the second round, and then just dumped him, and then Machida didn't even belong in there with him. Well, a lot of factors come into that, right? He's a lot bigger than Machida is. So if he's doing a standing guillotine and lets him go, he's going to get dumped. That's just the way it is. So, but listen to what Jones has to say, and then understand that this is the praise coming from the greatest of all time. Now, he faced Machida relatively early in his career. So from that perspective, you have to take the status that he gave Machida and the totem pole that he put him up on with a little bit of grain of salt. He's looking at him as a young fighter as opposed to an older fighter. But there's a lot to take from what Jones says here. All right, so here we go.
Lyoto actually intimidated me. He was probably one of the most intimidating guys I've ever fought against. I felt like I was like this young, raw champion, and Lyoto was a very skilled, very clean, well-rehearsed champion himself.
John Jones, Lyoto Machida, for the UFC Light Heavyweight Championship.
He's so unorthodox. When he fought in the southpaw stance, he could kick very well with both legs.
Lyoto kicks very fast. There's no wind-up to his kicks.
He could plunge very well. And he was a very educated fighter, you know, where a lot of mixed martial arts fighters are kind of brawling out there. Lyoto's been training drills since he was like 5 years old.
This is the most complete striker that John Jones has ever faced. No.
Lyoto actually intimidated me. He was probably one of the most intimidating guys I've ever fought against. I felt like I was like this young, raw champion, and Lyoto was a very skilled, very clean, well-rehearsed champion himself.
John Jones, Lyoto Machida, for the UFC Light Heavyweight Championship.
He's so unorthodox. When he fought in the southpaw stance, he could kick very well with both legs.
Lyoto kicks very fast. There's no wind-up to his kicks.
He could plunge very well. And he was a very educated fighter, you know, where a lot of mixed martial arts fighters are kind of brawling out there. Lyoto's been training drills since he was like 5 years old.
This is the most complete striker that John Jones has ever faced, no doubt about it.
But every time I would throw a kick, Lyoto would time the kick and catch me in the face with a punch. He did it quite a few times.
Oh! Pushing forward again is Machida.
My kickboxing coach Brinkley Jones, he said, you know, John, either you need to set up the kicks with your hands better or fake the kick and throw a punch.
Oh!
We faked the kick and threw a left overhand, and it landed hard. It wobbled him.
All right, so let's talk about what Jones said there. He said a lot, and I think that it says a lot about who John Jones is in terms of, one, the preparation for a guy like Lyoto Machida means that you got to have your ducks in a row. And when his trainers are saying, Lyoto would do this or Lyoto would do that, what that means to me and what I take from that is that this is the ultimate puzzle that you have to solve. If you can solve this puzzle, all other puzzles become easier, right? So that's my takeaway from Jones thinking that way. But moreover than that, look at the chess match he had to get in with Machida to win the fight, right? So throughout the fight, Machida's looking great. He's countering off Jones's kicks, which not many other fighters have done all that effectively. And this is a guy that's not substantially smaller than Jones, but I think Lyoto Machida goes like 6'1". Jones is 6'5". So he's doing it as a smaller fighter, which is smart. So instead of countering his punches, he's countering his kicks. So then Jones had to play the chess game of, all right, well, if I fake a kick and I guess right on what he's countering with, and the guess here was, I'm going to fake a left kick. Lyoto is going to respond with a left straight. I will then counter it with my left. And that's the left that cracked him. So really, and now listen, once he cracked him, the whole notion that, or the whole thing about John Jones choking Machida out is that now that Machida's wobbled, he's dealing with a high-level guy who's an amazing athlete. So he gets swarmed on, 6'5 guy who's got, you know, tremendous jiu-jitsu. And then that's, you know, as Lyoto's trying to clear the cobwebs, Jones is strangling him. So I think what Jones said there says a lot about Lyoto Machida. And listen, guys, I've presented Machida in a very favorable light here because I think Lyoto Machida is for sure a UFC and MMA Hall of Fame. He should be in either Hall of Fame. And I think that a lot of the work that he did was he definitely had his holes. But he was a very complete striker. And I think that if he were a little bit busier of a fighter, now listen, the busyness could have led to him getting knocked out more as well. But I personally think that he protected himself well enough that had he been busier, some of those split decisions would have went his way. But that wasn't his style, and that, you know, so we're left what we're left with. But in the end, you know, as we take another quick look, and I'll leave the camera on me and just look at this myself, in the end, we're left with a guy who was 26-9, right? Had one bad, real bad run with the Weidman loss, the Dalloway win, and then Rockhold, Romero, and Brunson all losses. So we're left with a guy who maybe is a difficult guy to understand in terms of his technique. I hope I shed some light on it. But listen, 100% this guy's a legend, 100% this guy's a Hall of Famer. And if you have some time, we all have some time now, take a look at some of his work in Fight Pass and tell me if I'm wrong. Hit the comments and say, listen, I think that, you know, this is like one of those paintings or like a rock band that really everybody wants to say is better than they actually are. It's like if you guys think I'm being an MMA hipster on this one, and I want people to think that, you know, Machida was better than he's been remembered because it somehow is like I'm too cool for school, let me know. I disagree. I think the body of work is there. I think the technique is there. Check him out. Let me know what you think. All right, guys, as always, make sure that you follow me at SM Cornerman. Craig can be followed at Craig Allen FNP. Follow Fight Night Picks. Like, subscribe, and tell your friends about all the content on Fight Night Picks. We will talk to you next time. Oh, also in the comments, tell me what you would change about the show and who you think we should do next. All right, guys, talk to you later. Peace.